Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to this podcast right now, thanks to science. Your phone or laptop or whatever is a miracle, honestly. This is so basic it shouldn't need to be said, but almost everything you touch today that makes your life easier is made possible by decades of rigorous science, hypotheses, research, testing, verification, etc. If we're going to solve some of the monumental problems facing humanity in the near future, that's also probably going to be because of scientific breakthroughs. But that doesn't stop us from being scared of it.
A woman has died after being hit by a self-driving Uber vehicle.
Facebook has enacted an emergency shutdown of two artificial intelligence programs.
Google is recording your movements even when you explicitly tell it not to.
The biggest risk that we face as a civilization is artificial intelligence.
And that's a contradiction that we have to solve. Every year, the Ontario Science Centre surveys Canadians on their attitudes towards science. And if you've been paying attention to the news, or to politics, or even just to your social media feeds, you probably know that there are some less positive attitudes towards proven research out there gathering steam. How do we handle that? I don't know, but if there's one thing science has taught me, it's to seek out the experts doing the actual work and ask them. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
If people have a solid understanding of the scientific method and the results are reported in the appropriate fashion, they'll realize that this is just the way science advances, that one experiment may change our views on how things work.
Dr. Maurice Bitron is the CEO of the Ontario Science Centre, which conducted the survey with Léger. He also has a PhD in radio astronomy, has taught science at every level, and spent time working in a policy role for the Ministry of the Environment. So yes, he's smarter than me, and probably you, and he needs to explain this. So, Dr. Bitron, what is this survey, and what is it trying to measure?
So the survey is an online survey across Canada, where 1,500 Canadians of all different socioeconomic groups answer this battery of questions related to science and their feelings and their knowledge and their attitudes towards science and technology. What we're trying to take is kind of the pulse of the attitudes of the population about science and technology. I think it's incumbent on organizations that work at the interface of science and society to have an idea of how attitudes have been evolving.
What kind of results were you expecting from the survey this year?
Well, this is the third year we're doing the survey. The first 2 years, there was a fair amount of consistency, so we were not expecting something very different, but we've been adding questions that are new and stood out from the survey. But an interesting evolution that we saw from last year is the concern that fake news may be affecting the way we understand the world because of the bombardment of sort of information from different sides. And so that showed an increase of about 5 points.
Was that something that worried you going into the survey? Just about how the conversation in the news has seemed to convince more people that science is more opinion than fact-based? Because that was something that stood out to me.
Yeah, that's something that concerned me even before we started doing the surveys. If you recall, National Geographic a few years ago published something in the first page. The War on Science was the cover title, and people linking autism to vaccination, so the movement not to vaccinate kids, and other types of concerns that seem anti-scientific, like concern with GMOs, etc. And so, yeah, I'm concerned that for a society like ours that is so based on science and technology, if a significant fraction of the population move away from science, how are we going to solve the problems that are in our way?
And we depend on science for everything now, but people seem to trust it less. And that's the dichotomy of this whole thing that I don't understand.
Yeah, you put your finger on it. I think that we've become used to using science and technology, yet, you know, are concerned about some of these aspects. I can't say that it's totally surprising, but I think it's important that we need to pay attention is the level of anxiety about the implementation of new technologies. 62% are concerned about artificial intelligence, 60% about large-scale automation, including self-driving cars, and I believe it's 50-something percent about the Internet of Things. Some of the concern is not unreasonable. I mean, if you think about what would be the consequences of, let's say, artificial intelligence and large-scale automation, the future of work, and what's going to mean for ourselves and our children, that's something that we need to have a conversation about because it will have profound societal impacts.
And what stood out to you most when you first got the results back?
The first thing that stood out to me is that although 74% of the respondents think that we're going to need science and technology to solve the very complex issues the world faces, 54% think that society is turning away from science. That's a huge, I think, dichotomy, and that's something that we need to pay attention to. So that's on the kind of worrisome side. On the positive side, and there's a lot of reason for optimism in the survey, I think, is that 84% of people think that science and technology have made our life better, which is certainly true. And 83% want to know more about science and technology, which is great. And 90% think that science centers and science museums are among the most trusted sources of information for science and technology, which is great. It also puts an onus of responsibility on institutions like our science center and others to do a good job.
When you think about taking the survey, do you feel like the world is turning away from science?
I see some people who are turning. I mean, for example, if we look at the result that 19% of those consulted think that there is a relationship between vaccination and autism, although this has been shown to be a fraudulent result, I'm concerned that new parents that are not going to vaccinate their children, I mean, that's a reason for concern.
How do you combat that percentage of people who take scientific research as opinion that they can kind of pick and choose from? What kind of language do you need to speak to them?
I think we need to do a better job of explaining what science is. And I think that to move away from science as a collection of information, but really science as a method to interrogate nature. So science as a scientific method, which we all apply in our lives. We start with a question based on curiosity. We test that question with experiments and we repeat until we find results. And I mean, the results always valid until the next experiment that may show something different. So if we have a better understanding of the scientific method from school on up, people will be better prepared to understand, be critical of results as reported, and put the right amount of confidence on the different results that we see in different sources.
So how can institutions like the Science Center insert themselves into the conversation so that the research and the answers are kind of coming from you as opposed to journalists who are trusted less and less, the numbers show?
For one thing, holding these surveys and having conversations like we are having is a good beginning, bringing some light to the issue. Now, we develop exhibits and we bring exhibits that we choose according to what we think is going to interest the public. And so knowing better what people are interested about allow us to set our programming accordingly. We have a series of talks called Great Conversations where we bring experts to have a dialogue with the public. With people specialized in science communication, like the people who work at science centers and museums. So we can have a conversation in plain language that everybody is able to contribute and understand.
Do you see anything as a scientist yourself when you read coverage of scientific research or just, you know, mainstream media talking about scientific advancement? Do you see anything that you worry contributes to what we're seeing going on in the public?
Yeah, I do. I think that we've become addicted to the soundbite and to the striking headline. And so if it bleeds, it leads, right? That's the motto of journalism. You know, if they're not that striking, they may not get reported. If they're striking, they may be exaggerated, so they get higher billing in the press. But that means that their true meaning is being somewhat distorted.
As soon as you start talking about kind of how we simplify headlines, I start thinking of all the reports I've seen on things like whether or not coffee is good for you, how much alcohol
exactly.
is good for you. And they always tell you what you want to hear or screaming that it's going to kill you.
But a major new study says no amount of alcohol is good for your overall health, not even that cheeky glass of red wine you might be holding.
The major benefit of red wine is not because it's red wine, but because it has alcohol.
A new study that suggests as you boost your energy, you may also be boosting your health.
Their study says maybe you should learn to live without Java, or perhaps cut down.
So that's a reason for concern. I think we need to look at the content, not what questions to ask. How big was the sample? Is the result statistically significant? What are the confounders? You know, so if we have a public that becomes more knowledgeable about and understands better how the scientific method works, and if we have, hopefully, a journalist that dial down the hyperbole, I think that's going to contribute to a better dialogue about scientific results.
Have you seen any kind of education or outreach that works better in journalism and science coverage than simply, you know, reporting new research says?
Well, yeah, of course, there are good journalists that do their homework and report in the appropriately balanced fashion. I think what they are up against is that their stories don't make it to the first page because, you know, they don't have that striking headline. And so it means that the public has to have the attention span to, you know, go and read this and have their own critical thinking tools to take things apart.
What does it mean to you and to other people in the community when you see politicians insert themselves into the scientific debate? I mean, Ontario no longer has a chief science officer now.
I understand that they've announced that we'll have a new chief science officer. I think it's society, highly technological like ours, depends on science and technology. It's not that you can turn the clock back on that. So maybe there would be a different way of focusing this. I think that science, and especially a training in science and technology, is a great equalizer. I mean, it's something that gives opportunity to people from lower economic strata or new immigrants. I myself, as an immigrant, the thing that opened the doors for me was my training in science. As far as jobs and opportunities and equalization for people from all walks of life, I think science and technology has a lot of promise. And authorities and politicians who acknowledge this, they'll be able to do things that are positive for society.
I also wanted to ask you about political polarization, because it seems like there are some scientific issues. And off the top of my head, vaccinations are a big one on one side of the spectrum, and things like GMOs might be an issue on the other side. How does that affect scientists who are trying to deliver solid research and facts when a lot of the people acting on that research are forced into one camp or another based on what party they belong to, and they sort of act on it that way? What does that do to scientists?
I think we need to distinguish between science and values and political values or social values. They're both inform what we do, and it's as much our values that inform that as scientific results. It's important that there be a dialogue between the policy community and the scientific community to be able to incorporate science into policy decisions. I teach a course at the University of Toronto on the role of science in public policy. I believe that these two areas, science and public policy, speak different languages. And if you're going to go into political science, you probably drop science back in grade 10. And if you're going to be a scientist, you probably drop social studies in grade 10. And so we have people highly specialized in their areas who don't have a common language. I believe that's something really important, and that's what I tackled in my course on the role of science and public policy. So this is an issue for our society, and I think a way of dealing with it is having scientists understanding better how the political discourse works, and having politicians understand better and policymakers understand better how science works and how can scientific results inform policy decisions. But we need to be clear that our decisions are made up from a number of factors. Science is just one of them. Our values make a bigger part of it.
Yeah, one of the things that stood out to me in the survey, obviously, was just the number of people who view science as opinion. And I don't understand where that mindset can come from.
I can understand that when you mentioned before the issue of coffee and the reports that it's good for you and bad for you, that can lead to people saying, well, that people are just saying their opinions. There's nothing really fundamentally solid here. But if people have a solid understanding of the scientific method and the results are reported in the appropriate fashion, they'll realize that this is just the way science advances, that it's an incremental development, and one experiment may change our views on how things work.
In the aftermath of kind of looking at this survey, and also given that you teach young people, what kind of feelings do you have about the future of our opinion towards science? Because on one hand, the numbers say that we're turning away from science a little bit. On the other hand, what do you see in the classroom?
Well, I'm an optimist by nature, and I came to the Ontario Science Center 4 years ago precisely because I think it's an area where it can have a lot of impact for society. As I see young people looking at science and using their curiosity to discover new things, I'm really encouraged. We have an award for young innovators, and the stuff they come up with is just amazing. So I'm very hopeful and optimistic about the future. But I think we need to provide the younger generations with that access to understanding what science really is, understanding a scientific method, knowing that science is something that is everywhere, it's part of life, and not something that other people, you know, do in some obscure laboratory. If we're able to change this perception, if we're able to inspire, as our mission says, a passion for the human adventure of discovery in the new generations, I think the future will be very bright. And that's why at the Ontario Science Center precisely trying to do that work, because I think it's important.
Amazing. I'm so glad that we can end this on an optimistic note. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Okay, thank you too.
Dr. Maurice Bitron, CEO of the Ontario Science Center. That was The Big Story. For more from us, visit us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Check out our archives or contact us. Hit us up on social media at Big Story Podcast, on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. And of course, find us wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a download, give us a rating, give us a review, tell your friends. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Claire Brassard, our lead producer, is AWOL right now. She's not AWOL. She's in Scotland drinking some nice whiskey, I hope, and bringing some back for me. Ryan Clark, our associate producer, is manning the laptop in her absence. Stephanie Phillips is our intrepid research assistant. And of course, Megan Coley, our social media editor, is the one actually responding to you when you chime in with your thoughts. That's it for me. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.